Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur with your host, Steve Kidd, third-generation minister and 30-year business coach. Listen in as amazing, world-changing authors, speakers, and coaches share their struggles and victories, and hear from best-selling authors' insight into how you, too, can live your life as a thriving entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur. Thanks for being with us here today as we talk about knowing your company's mission. What is the thing that your company is about? What drives it? What helps it make the impact? What are the things that your company does? Thanks for being here with us today on Thriving Entrepreneur. I'm so glad for every opportunity that we get to be together to learn how to thrive in our lives and businesses. Whether you're running the business of your life or you're running a giant Fortune 50 company, we all want to live our lives as thriving entrepreneurs. We want to learn and love and live and grow more and make a better and more positive impact on the world that we live in. I know that's why all of us are here, and I know that each of us sees that as more than anything the way that we redefine thriving entrepreneur. Trying to say two words at one time because they just kind of come out as something weird. Thanks for putting up with me. So today, like I said, we're going to be talking about knowing your company's mission. What does that mean? What is the thing that drives your company? What's its purpose? What's it really there for? Maybe your company's a nonprofit and it really truly has a mission. But maybe your company's a profit and it has things that it does to make an impact in the world. Or maybe there is some things that your company does that are more, to make an impact on the world in what they're doing, sustainability and other types of outreach kind of things. What is your company's mission? And then how does it make an impact? Knowing that really clearly and then really casting that vision in front of the people that are your employees, in front of your consumers, so that you can all work together and really, if you will, row the boat all in the same direction. All too often, the mission becomes so muddled. And because of that, you've got one person rowing one way and one rowing another way, and a person trying to jump out of the boat, and somebody outside of the boat trying to push it, and, you know, sharks in the water. The analogy could go on and on. But when we really truly know our company's mission, and when we really truly cast that vision in front of the people that work for us, the consumers that we serve, and in the world in general, it helps us be able to stay focused and clear. It helps those that want to in any way be a part of what we're doing, again, whether that's employee or consumer, it helps them feel a part of something special. And ultimately, especially these days, helping people feel like there's something special about your company that makes them feel good about being part of what you do, that's so huge. It's something really big that we all need to know and then really cast out there into the world. And that allows us to live, you guessed it, as a thriving entrepreneur. So let's jump into our first of three guests right now. Join me in welcoming Elise Woodworth. Hey, Elise, how you doing today?
I'm great, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing really good. It's glad to have you here with us. Tell us first a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And I'm excited to be here today and talk to you about what I've discovered, what I've found in the nonprofit industry, which is really fascinating to me because I haven't grown up professionally in the nonprofit world, but I've found myself here helping bring business to nonprofits, and it's been so rewarding. I started my career as an Air Force officer and transitioned from military service into some time as a contractor, and now I have my own company, and I help nonprofits overcome conflict so they can get focused on their mission. I do that by sharing my best-selling book, Business Not Battle, with them. And I'm really excited to be sharing with you today.
Well, it's always great to have conversations with you. Tell us a little bit about this new revelation you've had and how you are helping nonprofits these days.
So what I've found in talking with nonprofits and working with and in nonprofits really since 2014 is that there is a really strong drive to understand, to know the best way to make a nonprofit successful, to be able to complete the mission, to achieve the mission as successfully as they can do that. Unfortunately, there are so many unknowns and barriers and obstacles that exist in the industry, whether it's regulations or knowing that you are meeting all the right standards, whether it's finding funding, having the right people. There are so many things that exist that prevent that from happening. But my experience, what that shows me is that the real problem, the real obstacle that people face pretty much across the board is that they spend too much time tackling battles, putting out little fires or relationship issues that come up. They spend time focusing on that instead of advancing the mission for the organization. And we can agree, like, that's a problem because nonprofits bridge really important gaps in our society. They bridge that gap where industry stops and government falls short. Not only that, we know that more often than not, nonprofits are formed out of a passion for filling these gaps that they've identified. And people are attracted to a nonprofit to help and support because of that passion for filling the gap, whatever it has been identified as.
I love that. So let's talk about some basics and see if nonprofits are even covering that. We talk about the mission of the nonprofit. How many nonprofits, you know, maybe start off with a really great concept, but they've lost really what the mission is for them?
That's a really great question. And I find it so often that a founder will have such passion for a mission, for a particular mission, whether it's a food drive or educating about animal rights or ensuring that children are educated and have access to books. So many great nonprofit missions out there. What happens is they say, this is a great mission. I'm going to make it into a nonprofit. And often that passion for the mission gets distracted by these different battles, by, oh, I could be doing that too. Or wouldn't it be great if I could also fill in the blank? So my answer, my response to this distraction is that we need to bring business to nonprofits by helping them overcome those conflicts and get mission focused. This allows them to ignite their staff, engage their volunteers, and importantly, attract donors that are enthusiastic about supporting their mission. To do that, we need to build awareness, learn to ask thoughtful questions, and grow advocates inside and outside the organization. Now, these are all fundamental elements of the business, not battle mindset that I talk about in the book. When we put these together, not only does it create successful nonprofits, both in the leadership and in the governance of the organization, but it also, you start to see people attracted to the passion because people want to be involved in good things. People want to help achieve a mission. And that's what you start to see, is sort of this rewarding loop of, as I focus more on my mission, as I use business fundamentals, as I share my inspiration with other people, you start to see those volunteers come in and they're enthusiastic. They bring with them donors and more enthusiasm. And what you gain from that is really not just a mission focus, but it's actually mission success. So you start to see that gap bridged that you noticed that people start the nonprofit for. The whole reason they've started the nonprofit starts to be realized. And that is where the real success of a nonprofit comes in.
So we have this great mission. We put the vision of it in front of our people, and then we deal with people, right?
Right.
Which is really the concept of your whole book, is that we as people get in and we have our own little wars that we fight, especially in the board and stuff like that. How do we get away from that battle mindset to get into a cooperative and fulfilling the mission kind of a mindset?
Right. Awareness is where it all starts, Steve. It's not only awareness of yourself and of your strengths, but also awareness of the organization. So I'll just take a moment to talk about those two things. The first being awareness of yourself. Really, when you start to look at your strengths as a staff member, as a board member, as a volunteer, you yourself know what you're bringing. But that might not be exactly what the organization is in most need of. So I encourage people to do a skills audit of themselves and look not just at their strengths and weaknesses, or look at their resume, or look through those types of things, but actually think about the values that you have and why you have them, what your mission is and how you can achieve that. What are your not only strengths, but weaknesses? What is your education? What are your hobbies? Where could you fit in this organization? But then you have to answer that very question. Where do I fit in the organization? And become more aware of that organization. So if you have volunteers, if you have a position where you're coming in to make care packages, for example, that could be a very assembly line process and you just need to follow instructions. But maybe you feel like you could do a bit more. That's when you start to ask those questions. What more can I do for the organization? And by being aware of your strengths, you're less likely to feel that battle situation, that stress, that anxiety when someone else has a strength that's being demonstrated in the organization. You can use those as you gain more awareness, as you ask some more questions about the organization, where it's going, how you could be a bigger part of it. And it starts to create this beautiful picture of how the organization is working and how you could fit into furthering its success.
I think that's amazing. And nonprofits need it. They need that reminder of what their mission is. They need a process. They need to really know how to get people bought into. And you happen to actually have written a really amazing book about that, besides the fact that you then work with them after that. Tell us a little bit about your book, Business Not Battle.
So Business Not Battle for Nonprofits and Their Boards is really the mindset that effective board members are going to use to ignite real impact. So back in 2014, when I started on my first board, in my first board position, I looked everywhere for the how do I do this right guidebook? How do I not mess this up? Because that's what I wanted to know. And I found lots of literature, lots of books, lots of research on how to form a board, how to lead a board, effective board management, effective nonprofit management. But what I didn't find was how, as a board member, I could show up for my organization. And unfortunately, I had to go through the process of learning how to do that on my own for a number of years until I decided to look back at everything I had learned and capture it in a very easy to access, readable book that is also an audiobook, so you can listen to it as well. And it's just me talking to you about how you can be effective on your board, how you can be an advocate, how to ask thoughtful questions, and if change is necessary, how to lead innovation in a way that is going to create positive change and not get stuck in a battle cycle where you're constantly fighting for the next agenda, you're fighting for the next fundraiser. It shouldn't be stressful. It shouldn't be a battle. It's because you're in business.
I love that. And we can get the book, of course, on Amazon. How can a person work with you? Where can they go to connect with you?
So you can go to my brand new website, which is elisewoodworth.com. I am available for keynote speaking. I also do workshops, and you can buy the book there as well as the audio book. And I really look forward to getting to know as many nonprofits as possible. I find each organization unique and interesting, and I love helping them and seeing boards come together as teams. One of my favorite examples of this was starting to work with an organization a couple of years ago, and I asked a very common consultant question, where would you like to be in a year? And all the board members unanimously and without thought said off the board almost simultaneously as soon as I asked that question. And I thought, wow, I'm in for a good year. This is going to be good. And using the principles that I talk about in my book, using very fundamental business practices throughout the course of that year, was able to create a situation where the board now felt supported, like they had very tangible jobs and things to do. And so at the end of that year, we only lost one board member to family commitments, and we were able to bring on two new board members that were going to offer new insight and boost the energy in the group. And they really have. They've continued to do such great work, and it's been amazing to watch the transformation that they have made possible in their organization, to go from stressed out and putting out fires and being in a constant battle of, well, maybe we should just shut this thing down, to this is exciting. Let's see if we can. What can we do over the summer? What can we do to maybe move into a new and bigger space, because we need to expand this program? So I just really, that really excites me to be a part of those opportunities for nonprofits.
And give us your URL one more time.
Sure. It's www.elisewoodworth.com. ELISEWOOD WORTH.com.
Well, Elise, thanks so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Business Not Battle is such a great book, and the kind of stuff that Elise is doing, helping nonprofits really understand their mission and then focus on that, and then getting everybody to be bought in and everybody helping together to really improve the mission of that organization. It's such a huge thing. And whether you are part of a nonprofit board or there's a nonprofit that you support, pretty much covers all of us then, doesn't it? I really encourage you to read Business Not Battle and begin to see how really understanding, knowing, and casting the vision for that organization makes such a big difference in the lives of all the people that they serve, as well as the people that serve in that organization. And it helps them all live as a thriving entrepreneur. We'll be right back. Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. Go to AskSteveKidd.com and schedule a time to talk today. This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today as we talk about knowing your company's mission. It's about understanding the heart and soul and core of who you are as a company and why you do what you do, and then sharing that with the internally in the company and then externally to the people that come in contact with the company so that everybody is on board with that mission and is helping to make the impact that your company is meant to make. Whether it's a brand new company or a company that you took over, or it's a company that's been around for a long, long time, it's important that we know our mission and that we then cast the vision of our mission. Knowing your company's mission is imperative and a huge part of living as a thriving entrepreneur. With that said, let's jump in to our next guest. Join me in welcoming Andrew Swiler. Hey, Andrew, how you doing today?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. First off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
So I'm the CEO of Lanteria. It's a company that's it's an HR management software. It's actually a company that we acquired about 18 months ago. So I started my career in private equity. I've been an entrepreneur living in San Francisco and now living in Barcelona for the last 12 years, started companies in eyewear, e-commerce, software. So when I sold my last company, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I knew I didn't want to do the zero to one thing. I was kind of stressed from starting my last company. And I'd known about these things called search funds. And it's basically where you acquire kind of a small business, put together a small group of capital, use an SBA loan and acquire a small business. And we went out and did that. So I knew I needed to buy something that could do remote work first. And software was obviously one of the only type of industries where you could do that. And so I went out, searched for a software company and found Lanteria after about 18 months. And after 2 or 3 months of negotiations and kind of putting together the capital, we acquired it.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. So explain to us a little bit in more detail what the company does, why it appealed to you.
So HR management, I mean, the analogous company would be Workday. Workday is the most famous competitor we have. Obviously, they have Super Bowl commercials. We barely can even make a YouTube commercial, but it's still analogous from a product perspective. So it's, you know, hire to retire software. So if you work at a larger company, you know, every company has one of these softwares out there now. It's something that automates sort of the HR processes. So, you know, you find a company that you're interested in, you apply there, they get your information. That information, you know, once you get hired, gets moved into their HR management system, where you have, you know, all your documents, all your contracts, all your pay stubs, all your performance management, you know, with your manager, all your absence management, you know, when you're sick, when you're on leave, when you're on vacation, all that stuff lives inside of Lanteria. And then, you know, we also do things like, we integrate with payroll. We have learning management. So, you know, if you have continuing education or licensing that needs to be done inside the company, you can run that directly from our product. So it pretty much runs anything within the HR process.
Wow, that's cool. So you needed something that was remote workers. So you bring in folks that are doing the placement, not really hiring, but placement remotely. And does that mean you don't even have an office, or do you have an office as well? Or
we don't. We did. We've had a couple of offices in the 18 months that we've had Lanteria. We've had a couple of offices that we had sort of temporarily. So we had an office in Kiev for a while, because we acquired this company from two guys from Ukraine. And, you know, a lot of the company is still in Ukraine. So we had a lot of people in Kiev. And while there were blackouts and all these power issues, we had to rent an office for them, because there are offices in Kiev right now that are guaranteeing internet and guaranteeing electricity. So we rented some offices there, but right now we currently have no office. We have employees in, I think, seven different countries. And people work wherever they want to work. We give them a stipend to, you know, if they want to go to a co-working space, if they want to kind of fix up their own home office. I would say I have the worst home office of anyone in our company, but we give them a stipend and the option to sort of fix it up. But yeah, it's fully remote.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. So talk to me a little bit more about the concept of the way that you acquired the company and how that process works.
So we acquired the company using an SBA loan, which, you know, you could really, what I knew is I only had X amount of capital that I could put into this. And I knew the best way for me to sort of get more ownership inside the company was through debt. So we looked for a company that was in software that had profitability, which is hard to find. A lot of software companies, all they care about is growth. So there is no profitability. So the process was, we found an interesting target. The deal was a good deal. You know, we negotiated a very good price. And then we went out and found investors. The investors committed to the deal. They thought it was interesting. Most of the investors that we got to invest with us, it took about 20 minutes to convince them, because they saw the price. You know, they looked at it. It's a software company. We were basically buying it for 1x revenue. So the last trailing 12 months of revenue. And then once we had those people committed, we went to a bank. It was very hard to find a bank, because I live overseas. I don't have a lot of assets in the US. So to convince a bank to work with me was quite complex, but I had a good friend of mine that does similar work. He put me in contact with a great bank called Dogwood State Bank in North Carolina. And they did the deal with us within, it was like 3 weeks. We had gotten it done. Actually, the hardest part to get the biggest obstacle in the whole process, even for raising the money, was I needed to get life insurance. And apparently you can't get life insurance if you live overseas. So I had to find a life insurance company that insures people in Europe, but also was valid in the US. And there was really like only two in the whole world that do that. So that was an interesting part of the journey.
Well, that's interesting. I never even thought about that as far as life insurance goes. That's cool.
I didn't either.
Wow. So now you have the company. Talk to us a little bit about some of the first things. Because, I mean, obviously, if the people were selling the company, they were either ready to get out of it, or there were problems with the company, or what have you. What were some of the first kind of things you needed to do to get the company back in order, or whatever was needed to start off with?
I mean, the company, it's not like it was in disarray or had a lot of problems. The issue is the previous owners just didn't care about growing it. And if you're in software, if you're not growing, you're just kind of dying. Like you're sitting on the vine. You can make a decent profitable company, which is what they were doing. And obviously they were living in Kiev, you know, bringing in $500,000 a year for themselves. That's a pretty good lifestyle. So they didn't really hit the accelerator that hard. And I would say that was the biggest challenge for us, was to take a group of people. I mean, there were 16 employees that had been sort of coasting, living comfortably. You know, the owners took care of a lot of the difficult situations. And all of a sudden they were thrown into a situation where it's like, okay, we have new owners, we have new management. These people know nothing about our business. We have to teach them. And at the same time, we were pushing them to grow the company, saying like, okay, what's going on in marketing? What's going on in sales? Sales guys, you need to start prospecting. You need to start changing the way you do things. You need to start being more aggressive in sort of like the terms you're offering customers. And for the most part, we ended up clearing house. Like the sales and marketing team, there's one guy left that was in sales and marketing that continued. And then also, you know, because of the situation in Ukraine, one of our biggest challenges was, you know, we had to diversify the company a little bit. There was too much capital, human capital in Ukraine. So we luckily had a couple of people that left the country. So that was fortunate. But we had a few people we had to let go of and replace them, to replace them with people in India. And we brought in a new CTO that's based in Indianapolis. So we had to make certain decisions on just changing personnel, which is pretty normal. I mean, any acquisition, like I said, I'd worked in private equity. I mean, usually there's a 30 to 40% turnover within the first 18 months of any acquisition. So it's been relatively normal. We've kept quite a few people. But the biggest challenge is always, you know, a people thing and new, trying to build a new culture, change things. But the fortunate thing is with remote work, it is, I personally think it's a lot easier to change people. Obviously firing people is a lot easier when you're not in person because you have less of a personal attachment, but hiring people, you know, we put up a job post. If we have a job open, like right now, we're trying to hire some SDRs for sales. We put up job posts in 15 different countries over, you know, a 2-week period. So every day we'll post in a different country and take the best candidates from there and start interviewing them. And the good thing about that is you just get a bigger talent pool. Like if I had to only hire SDRs in Denver, Colorado, and that was my only talent pool, it's way harder for me to negotiate salaries. It's harder for me to find people. My talent pool is way, way smaller. And you know, now tomorrow I'm interviewing a guy in Brazil, a guy in Colombia, a guy in India, two people in Canada, a guy in Los Angeles. So it allows you to just diversify and move a little bit faster in sort of this replacing people inside the company.
So now for you personally, are you just all in with this particular company and you want to really see it grow and go and explode in a good way? Or are you... are you kind of looking at stabilizing it to the point where it's, you know, got a stable growth and then you're going to do another one?
Ideally, what we'd like to do with this company is I'm trying to raise more capital right now we're trying to acquire some complementary pieces. So maybe a payroll or benefits software, more of an employee engagement type of software, or even diversify globally. So to acquire a similar competitor in the Middle East. That for me right now is, you know, we're trying to grow organically, but also at the same time, potentially inorganically, because I see that we've been trying to raise capital just for this, for sort of a growth round. And what I've seen is that investors are a little bit more interested in this inorganic growth because they saw that we acquired this company. And they say, well, why don't you go out and acquire more things and see if we can, you know, build a little bit faster here. So ideally that seems to be the path that we're probably going to take over the next 18 months, I would say, is try and raise a bigger pool of capital, you know, 10 to 20 million, and go out and try and acquire, you know, maybe two more companies that we can sort of tuck in inside of the business.
Wow, that's really cool. So for the person listening, are you, you know, looking for investors, or are you looking for people that more want to use your service, or how can we, as the listeners, how can we help you out or engage with you?
A little bit of both. If you're a potential customer, I mean, we have a very niche product. Our product is, you know, we focus on Microsoft customers. So we focus on Microsoft companies that are about 100 to 5,000 employees. That's sort of our sweet spot. typically because they're Microsoft companies, you know, they're in very boring, you know, they're looking at compliance. They're in, you know, manufacturing, aeronautics, federal contractors. So we work with pretty boring businesses, which is what we like. But if you are a potential customer, we would love to, you know, help you build a great HRMS experience. And if you're an investor, we are looking to raise capital right now, like I said, for growing Lanteria, but also potential inorganic growth opportunities that could come up in the future.
I love that. All right. Well, for the people who would like to engage with you further, how can they get in contact with you?
So probably two places. One would be, well, you can find us on Lanteria, Lanteria.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn, Andrew Swiler, Swiler, or on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Swiler, Swilera.
I love that. Well, Andrew, thanks so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
I think the heart and soul and core of what Andrew did there was he took a company that was already going, really, really put together the company's mission well, and then cast that vision in front of the people. And now they're growing and they're doing the things that they need to get done. And that's important, whether you take over a company like what Andrew did, or you've started the company yourself. It's important for you, first of all, to know your company's mission. And then second of all, to share your company's mission to the people who are part of what you're doing, both the internal and the customer-related type of people in your company. And that allows us to live as a thriving entrepreneur. With that said, we're going to take our next break here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Don't go away. Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third-generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. Go to AskSteveKidd.com and schedule a time to talk today. This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today as we talk about knowing your company's mission. What is the mission of your company? How does your company make the impact that it's supposed to make? What are the things that are integral to your company really fulfilling that mission statement to live with the culture that your company, you want it to have? First you need to know it, then you need to write it down. And then you need to articulate it clearly to the people who are part of it so that they can too also be bought into your company's mission, be part of it, and make the impact that your company makes. Talking about company's impact, have I got another really great guest for us to round out our show here. Let's jump right in to our next guest. Join me in welcoming Simon Shelley-Bakes. I probably didn't say that right, but welcome, Simon. Thanks for being with us here today.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Tell us first off a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
So I am a reforming academic that has been drawn into entrepreneurship on the intersection of digitization and environmental sustainability since 2018. Before that, I was a professor in a business school teaching business model innovation and sustainability, ESG. And now I split my time between my academic duties and my entrepreneurial ventures.
So talk to us a little bit more about your company. What specifically kind of things do you do?
So Handprint is a digital tech platform that connects companies to the most influential and impactful impact organizations, nonprofits, charities in the world, and enables companies to buy quantified units of positive impact, such as one tree planted, one coral restored, 1 kilogram of plastic removed from the ocean, or one person fed for a day. And so we have a marketplace where companies can buy these units, and then we develop the capability to integrate micro contributions into a variety of business processes, whether that is e-commerce transactions, bank card transactions, or advertising, or any kind of business process. So we can link companies' KPIs to the creation of positive impact.
So, are they specifically companies that are, doing waste removal from the oceans or things like that, or are they just for more like clean energy solutions and things like that for companies?
So we mainly work with companies in the service industry and banking clients, fintech companies. So the set of activities that our clients perform is actually less important. So let's say a bank can integrate our capabilities into their loyalty program so that it can reward its bank card users for transactions or for saving, with by giving them points, and then these points can be turned into real-world positive impact. Or an advertiser can say, I'm going to make a pledge that says, for every 10,000 people that view my ad, I am going to remove 1 kilo of plastic from the ocean, and demonstrate that pledge in the ad itself to increase the ad's performance, and of course, to create a positive impact in the world.
So, in general, what would it cost a business to remove 1 kilo of plastic from the ocean?
So that depends on the provider of the supply. So we work with a variety of impact partners. We work with Plastic Bank, which is a large impact organization from Canada. We work with Seven Clean Seas. They have different prices. So they are priced that is on our platform. It will cost anywhere between 70 cents to $2.50, depending on a variety of metrics. And then for companies to use our service, they'll have to subscribe to our SaaS that enables them to do the tracking, have auditable data, and make credible claims, which is of course important for their ESG reporting.
That's interesting. So, in general, and I realize this is a real big generalization, but in general, what kind of a uptick in people using their services or those kind of things, what kind of a conversion rate does it create when you can say each one of your purchases goes to, removing X amount of waste from the ocean?
Yeah, it's hard to say this in general, but what we can say is, for instance, we did an A/B testing with a large Australian e-commerce store together with Google, and we found a 16% increase in sales and cart conversion. And that meant that for that customer, they had a 6x return on the money they spent, they were doing local reforestation. So that's one very strong example. In the advertising space, we did an experiment with Uber Eats in Japan, and we identified that the ad completion rate went up by about 30%, and the click-through rate also increased by 35% above kind of industry averages. So you get substantive business effects that are linked to the integration of positive impact into your kind of daily business practices. And then, yeah, we also have these applications for employee engagement and in the retail banking industry, where the focus is really more on kind of supporting loyalty or reducing the cost of customer acquisition. But we haven't been able to collect very detailed data on the quantified effect of this yet. We'll be able to do so in the next couple of months.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit more about the use case for a company. First of all, does a company need to be a certain size in order to realistically be able to adopt and use your program?
No, I think this is one of the big differences between the classic approach to sustainability, which really focuses on how can we reduce our negative impact, and what we are doing, which is focusing on the creation of positive impact. Any company, no matter how small in size, can say we are going to create a positive impact. And you, of course, have to figure out what is financially viable and then figure out, does it lead to an improvement in the underlying business? But there is no minimum requirement. Of course, we prefer to work with very large companies that plant millions of trees or restore hundred thousands of corals. But if you're a one-man shop and you want to say, hey, for every transaction, we're going to do this, or for every new listener, I'm going to do something good in the world, you can do that as well.
So I'm looking here on your website, and you have this really cool calculator where a person can kind of take a look at what country their employees are from and what kind of things you can do. You know, give us some ideas of, you know, if your company isn't doing this at all, where's the best way to place to start? Is it in more of a customer loyalty program, or just something really straightforward? Like, you know, for every product you buy, we are going to contribute X percentage towards.
So, I mean, from a simplicity perspective, doing something like 1% of sales or 1% of profit is, of course, pretty straightforward. But the real business value only comes from a closer investigation in terms of what are the KPIs that really change the performance of the business, whether those KPIs relate to how a company interacts with its customers or how it interacts with its employees or with its partners. And if you can find those critical KPIs that are essential to your growth and your business success, and then enrich them in a digital way with this kind of positive impact, then you're going to support your core KPI. So we recently have a client, which is a large B2B fintech. And so they said, like, for us, the core KPI is global transaction volume, like how much money moves through our system. And so they're connecting that KPI to a commitment to support reforestation. And then they say, this becomes something that we talk about with every one of our clients, right? So they say, not only do we have an amazing service, but also if you work with us, you're indirectly going to support this global reforestation effort. So it's a competitive differentiator. And as the company grows bigger, their KPI, of course, goes up and their commitment goes up. And so I think that's really what you need to find, like, what is that KPI that really drives strategic alignment and supports your business growth so that your business growth can also align with growth for the planet?
I love that. So let's talk a little bit about where the future is in that. I mean, what kind of, let's really go huge, what kind of impact would you as a company like to make?
So our ambition as an organization is to become a phoenix. And so in the startup world, unicorns, everybody knows what that is. So, but a phoenix is a company that's responsible for the restoration of $1 billion in ecosystem services every year. And so that's really the goal. And I think that is realistic within a few years. And as we're kind of growing now and we're doing a crowd equity fundraise in the US, we're really pushing our new vertical in the banking industry, where the potential is huge to create massive change and to, as a consequence, source a lot of funding to create massive positive impact in the world. So, but that's really the goal. And I think then the longer term goal, which is part of our like 10-year plan, is to be nominated or ideally even win the Nobel Prize for Peace.
Well, I love that. So for somebody who wants to be involved, tell us some more specifics about the who's and the where's, and of course, how do we get in contact with you?
So the team is based largely in Asia and Europe at the moment, but we are setting up, or we have set up, a company now in Delaware. So you can, of course, find us on handprint.tech. My email address is simon@handprint.tech. And we're also on YouTube. We have a pretty active on LinkedIn. And then as I mentioned, yeah, we're doing this crowd equity fundraise on WeFunder. So if you're an American and or you have an American bank account and you want to contribute to that crowd equity fundraise, that's also possible. And then depending on how much you contribute, you can become an ambassador of the company. And that gives you potential access to referral fees if you introduce prospects that become clients.
And that's handprint.tech, handprit.tech. All right. Well,
Correct.
Simon, just encourage us a little bit, inspire us as to what is possible if we all work together on this issue.
So I think there's like an interesting analogy, right? So like if you're doing something individually, you can't really get much done, right? So we basically really rely on very large companies to kind of change in the world. But if you do something on your own and you can convince two other people to do the same, and you do this 30 times, so those two other people will also convince two other people. After 30 times, you've convinced a billion people, right? And I think that's the power of doing stuff together, the exponential growth. So if every person would basically say, I'm going to have one less cup of coffee a month, and I'm going to use that money to, I don't know, do something good in the world, we can see incredible change at a very, very rapid pace. So that's a little bit the vision behind what we're doing. And yeah, I believe that every single company or every single individual, no matter how small their sort of activities are, can choose to find a project or a type of impact that is aligned with their values. It doesn't need to be nature. It could be education. It could be the arts. And if you support that regularly, you're going to make a very large impact over time.
Well, Simon, I really appreciate what you and handprint.tech are doing. And I hope that a lot of people will jump in and join you in your project. Simon, thanks so much for spending some time with us here today.
Thanks so much, Steve. It was a great pleasure being here.
How does your company make an impact? What are the things that you're doing to give back? What are the things you're doing to make the world a better place? What are the things that you do that make the impact in the lives of the people that you're meant to serve? All of those kind of impacts are important to your company. And there's companies like Handprint that can help you be able to do the sustainability and the environmentally friendly kind of things. But I encourage you that in all of the different ways that your company makes an impact, that you really take a look at it and you be intentional about it. And how do you do that? Well, you do that by knowing your company's mission. I said that before, didn't I? That's right. Knowing your company's mission allows you to then be able to really define, and this is how our company is going to make the impact in the world. Not just, you know, this is how we're going to make money and this is what our clients need, but also on a bigger scale, what are we doing to make our world a better place? What a great way to be able to look at our company and also live as a thriving entrepreneur. We are going to take one more commercial break, and then we'll be right back here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Don't go away. Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third-generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. Go to AskSteveKidd.com. and schedule a time to talk today. This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today as we've been talking about knowing your company's mission. What are the integral parts of who and what your company is. You know, you've heard of mission statements, and those are a good place to start. You know, this is the intentions of our company. And then expand on them and talk about them and dive into them. That's one of the things I love doing with books, is helping CEOs especially be able to articulate, you know, this is why we started the company. This is where the company's been. This is where it's going. This is our mission. This is the impact that we want to make in the world. These are the things that we do better, different, more amazing than anybody else in the world does. And this is why that's important. But, you know, if we just come to our employees and say, you know, and then we can all get paid, you know, I mean, they do want to get paid, don't get me wrong. But, you know, it just kind of falls flat. Studies have shown that, especially with the millennials, but everybody really these days is more interested in the impact that their company is making in the world and the good that their company can do, even than what their company actually does as a company. It's important that we think about the world around us, about the things that people in the world need and what we can do, what we can bring, if you will, to the table to make the world a better place. And then we take all that and we flesh it out even more into our company's mission. So it becomes beyond the statement or even beyond a YouTube video that we do to cast a vision. It becomes really, truly a mission that drives our company, that people buy into, that they want to be a part of as the employees of our company. And then when we take that out to the rest of the world, to our consumers, to our investors, to all the other people that are, you know, going to be intricately a part of our company, we have a really solid, powerful mission of impact that we're making in the world. And people want to be a part of it. They're like, oh, yes, I would like to invest in your company. I would love to be, a customer of your company because of all the cool things that your company is doing. And that's what we want. We want people to understand that very basic of concepts. And that's that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So we want them to understand how much we care. We want to show them the coolness that is us. Because guess what? You are uniquely brilliant. You were created for a purpose. And the world needs you. That's right. We need you. We really, really, actually, desperately do need you to be the you that's you. So that you can make the difference that only you can make. That you can shine and thrive and live and make the difference in the world. And the world will be a better place because, you know what? The world is a better place thanks to you being a part of it and knowing your company's mission and sharing that with the world and making it known is one of the best ways I can think of to live as a thriving entrepreneur. And I want that for you. So I hope, until we're together again next time, that you're happy, safe, warm, and loved, that you know your mission, you share it with the world, that you live every day of your life as a thriving entrepreneur. Until we're together again next time, have a great week.
Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. If you want to get your question answered, send an email to questions@wehelpyouthrive.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time.
Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third-generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. Go to AskSteveKid.com and schedule a time to talk today.